Welcome everybody to Capes and Scowls West.
West.
Issue 5.5, where we do the ever-loved comic reviews. Well, I have, I think, the less comics this time, so maybe you guys can start first, and we'll see where it takes us. 1, 2, 3, Nat.
All right.
You made a noise. You go first.
Plus, when the countdown before recording, I was like, I almost went into the Care Bear song.
Care Bear countdown. Nice.
I'm going to start with Suicide Squad number 20.
Well, I'm only woohooing for one reason.
Right, exactly. The reason I picked up the book, perhaps. So I'm not generally a Suicide Squad reader, not because I'm not a fan of the property or the characters, just not the book for me. You know, I find it all really interesting. I enjoyed watching the movie for as manic and broken as it may be.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy the characters on the Arrowverse. Obviously, I love Harley, being an old school Batman animated series fan. But I picked this up because Stepan Sedgwick is doing the artwork, and after our Aquaman conversation a few weeks ago, I was all about this. But I picked it up. It's written by Rob Williams, art by Stepan Sedgwick, as said before. It is a kind of an interim issue between the events of the previous one, which I gather Rick Flagg sacrificed himself to save the team, or to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
So it's Amanda Waller basically going down the line of the Suicide Squad members to figure out who is going to lead the team in the field. So it's a really, like, it's an interesting concept, because how the hell do you get a bunch of crazy people together, and how do you lead them? So, you know, it's Katana trying to plead her case, and most of the stuff in here is absurd. Like, Captain Boomerang pops the top of a beer bottle with a boomerang, you know, like, but it's gorgeously drawn, and
of course, as we would expect it to be,
because of Cedric.
Yeah.
But it was just really enjoyable. It was a nice just jump on and have a quick ride. I love Harley's look in this particular book, and it's probably just because of the artist.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like New Harley that's been based so heavily on the film version of the character. The previous edition from the New 52 I thought was a better look for her, but I was willing to give it a chance.
I feel like in this one also she has a very adult look.
She does.
She is grown up. She is a woman.
Yeah.
Even if she's still psycho, she's still a woman.
Right.
She's a woman psycho.
Well, and I think he does a good job of, like, the red-blue colors in the hair, too. Like, it's really intense.
It is.
And there's actually a sequence later where she appears in full costume and she's actually wearing clothes. You know, that she's got some skin showing, but it's not a baby doll tee and booty shorts. She actually has, like, leggings on that almost reach the top of the shorts themselves. It's thematic. It looks more like a superhero costume and less like stuff thrown on. And if she's going to go in the field.
Ass.
Yeah, exactly. Like, nothing against Margot Robbie. She's gorgeous, and in the role, she was really, really good. Although I don't hear her voice when I'm reading this. I still hear, you know, Arlene Sorkin, which is really crazy, hearing, like, Arlene Sorkin doing, like, an adult Harley. Uh-huh. I'm not even going to attempt to do that voice. But I really enjoyed this. I thought this was a great jumping on point. It was a good pause. Obviously, I don't think Cedric is going to continue in the book, but it's a nice entryway into the Suicide Squad. And, trying to figure out who the team leader should be, it was fun. It was really, like, it was an easy pick up and go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Cedric does that overall. He's the kind of person he brings you into the book and then he leaves.
Yeah.
Which is sad to me. I mean, I don't know. It's like all my other relationships. But I feel like that could be what it's all about. He's just really good at bringing people in.
Which is nice, but the negative to that is nobody's going to live up to the art that
was
done. So.
Right. All right. Sir Patrick.
So I think I'm gonna do two quick ones. I'm gonna do Scooby Apocalypse and Black Panther number 15.
Mm-hmm.
Both of these, for me, I'm not gonna do them back to back just because they're both getting good. There's not a whole lot to say about either of them, other than that a lot of stuff that's been happening in both of them is building up to an interesting point. In Black Panther, after the whole Fall of Wakanda story arc, it kind of went into a slump after that, and I think that's because Ta-Nehisi Coates is putting all of his writing skills into Black Panther and the crew right now.
So good!
So, yeah. And
which is where he should put it.
Yeah.
Even though it got canceled.
Yeah. But conversely, main title Black Panther, I felt, was falling by the wayside a little bit. However, in this one, we get some great relationship arcs. We have just some great bits between Aneka and Io, building their relationship through the Midnight Angels. And then in the end of it, we have T'Challa and Storm kind of having this heart-to-heart. It's getting back to, like, the will-they-won't-they kind of stuff.
It's been building for a while, this whole... Mm-hmm. I think he's been... Ta-Nehisi's been doing that for a while now, especially even in Black Panther and the crew.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Like, there's a multi-story relationship going on here. And then, on top of these human relationships, we have the relationships between the Wakandans and their gods also building up. And in an interesting way, where before I was kind of like, man, I don't care, let's get back to a social revolution. And now I'm like, where is this going? Uh-huh. I'm really interested to see where it's going. Scooby Apocalypse, different but similar. We have a new addition to the team here. It's Vilma's sister-in-law, I guess, is on the team now. She was married to her abusive brother. Also, we have this, and the whole issue takes place around the monsters just kind of migrating. They don't know why. They're trying to figure out why. They're all just going somewhere. So it's really, it sounds really lame, but it's honestly like, why are all these like killer monsters just going places? And where are they going? And then we have the Scrappy-Doo mini, sort of mini arc that's
finally
also
integrating.
Yep, that's finally integrating into the storyline. So just a lot of things coming to a head here in Scooby Apocalypse as well. This is number 14.
That's so awesome.
Yep.
Well, I will do Rat Queens, number 4. I guess their reboot. So I love Rat Queens. I've read it since it first came out, and it was in a lull for me as well, especially after Cedric was on it, and then he wasn't, and then I was sad. But what I really like about this one is that Braga is really much a part of the team now. She's kind of always been, she's been part of a different team, but now she's on the Rat Queens, which is good. She's one of my favorite trans characters ever. And she, the whole setting behind this one is looking at the past and the future and what they're trying to accomplish. And basically they're going into a temple of ruin, and they're like, we never do temples. We know why we hate temples, because they always have the worst traps ever. And so they decide to do this temple anyways. And they come up to what D&D fans would know as a mimic, or something like that, where it's a treasure chest that seems like a treasure chest, but it's not. And they're trapped in this temple currently, and they have to find a way to get out, and the chest is the first test they have to get past. So they accomplish what they have to accomplish, and then you go into the next test, and it's really a hilarious one, because they're asking Betty, like, there's just all these traps everywhere, and she's the halfling, so you expect her to be the best at traps. So she's, like, really intensely looking at every single detail, like, how am I going to get through, how am I going to make this happen? And to get to the bowl at the end, which is an artifact they need. And they're like, she's like, all right, I think I got this. Hannah, levitate it over here to us. And that's the classic Rat Queens right there. It's the classic Rat Queens.
That's great.
And then they're basically at this point, they're in the final test. And the final, well, not the final test, but it seems like the final test. They have to look at a mirror and go, Mira? What am I? Some kind of Jersey girl? What's going on, Mira?
You are pretty much a Jersey girl.
They have to go into this mirror, and then when they go through it.
Oh, we've broken the end there. Hold on for a second, folks, while we restart them.
When they go through, they basically, it seems like they're going to be doing some sort of a origin tale, mm-hmm. because when they walk through, the first thing you see is Hannah meeting Betty,
okay.
talking to a girl that looks like her is Betty, and Betty doesn't know her, and she looks super young. So it should be kind of an origin story of how they all met.
Cool.
Is what I'm imagining is going to happen. So yeah, anyways, Rat Queens, pick it up. This is a good starting point. Start issue number 4 is a good one to jump into.
Cool. Alright, well I will jump into The Amazing Spider-Man Renew Your Vows number 8. Renew Your Vows is the out of continuity Spider-Man story that everybody should be reading. It's proving that you can tell a story with the superhero being married and having a kid and it being awesome.
Nice.
This issue centers around Mary Jane and Peter in a fight with Mysterio. At least that's where this framework begins. MJ is Spinneret, so I'll try to refer to her as that in her superhero term. But her powers are literally, if she's in proximity to Peter, she has powers similar to him. So she kind of siphons off his powers. Well, in this, what's happening is that she's literally stealing the powers from Peter. So as they're fighting, he's getting weaker if she's pushing herself further. So there's a balancing act that's happening. And she feels like that's representative of their whole relationship, is that Peter's usually carrying all of the weight and putting things back together, and she's sort of siphoning the life out of him.
Oh, my gosh.
So,
deep.
Yeah, right? Exactly. So that she wants to do more, and she hears that Liz Allen's company is now working on biotechnology for enhancing human potential.
Any relation to Barry Allen, by any chance?
Wrong universe. She moves really slowly and methodically. and Liz is also the main antagonist's mom, because Normie Osborn seems to be being put as the true villain behind the scenes of all of this, and Normie is the son of of Harry Osborn and Liz Allen.
Okay, her name is Liz Allen, you said?
Yep.
Okay.
Relation to Barry.
And Liz Allen, because you've seen Spider-Man Homecoming. Yes. Yeah.
Is that Liz Allen?
Liz Allen.
No way.
Yeah, so.
Nice.
Bringing things together. But anyway, Spinneret actually decides to visit Liz Allen and have a discussion about this biotechnology. And she shows her the in-production bio-enhancement suit that the government won't let her test human trials on, and Spinneret's like, well, they don't have to know about the human trials.
Mm-hmm.
And this suit seems vaguely familiar to the Spider-Man lore as a possible symbiote from outer space.
Yeah, however, it also very much looks like the Invincible Iron Man Spider-Woman suit.
Yes, it does. I love that.
For those geeks who are really ready to go deep down.
The spider on the belly area. Yep.
That's very much a Spider-Woman from the Invincible Iron Man cartoon.
I love that cartoon.
Me too. One of my favorites.
So it seems like this is actually going to be a Venom story. There's some hallucination stuff or dream sequence. And it's not clear because their daughter has a spider sense that is almost to see into the future. So it's hard to tell in this issue, and they don't really explain if we're seeing a future event. But it's clear that the suit that MJ has, something else is going on with it. And it's really looking like it's going to be a Venom story. And it's done really well. This is just
nice.
Ryan Stegman might as well just be doing Spider-Man books, period. This it's so, so good. Just 90s fun. I love it. Absolutely. Go give it a read.
Nice.
So for my next review, I'm going to do Champions number 10, which Leander also has in his review stack over here. Before I get into this, I'm going to say I did not like this issue. I love the Champions, and I'm going to keep reading it.
Yeah.
But fuck Secret Empire. I'm just throwing that out there. Fuck Secret Empire. I knew almost from the get-go, the fact that it has the little, like, Secret Empire logo at the top, yeah, this was not going to be a good issue. It's Champions tie into the Secret Empire, whole storyline that Marvel's doing right now, where Captain America is a Hydra agent, and... You know, the world is whatever. I don't care about any of it. I don't... The only thing I care about is that they fucked up this issue of Champions. That's about as far as I can get. Still, great writing. Great artwork. There's even some bits in here that are redeemable. Fuck Secret Empire. I don't know if I can get that.
Here's the thing, though. I'm gonna ask you honestly. I need you to honestly say this.
Okay.
Is it because Ms. Marvel's not in here?
No, I actually really liked the whole. That was one of the things I really loved is how they go into this prison camp for Inhumans to hopefully find Ms. Marvel. And instead of finding Ms. Marvel, they run into a young girl
who happens to be named Kamala. Yeah, that was good.
Who's, like, dressed up as Ms. Marvel, pretty much, because she's her hero. And I love that part, because a lot of stuff I've seen online and stuff, especially from female Muslim American community, is like, Ms. Marvel is our hero. Way to go, Ms. Marvel. And so I think this kind of brings a little bit of that into, like, a little bit of a self-aware comic part.
Right.
But no, I honestly, just because Ms. Marvel is in it, doesn't mean I hate
it. I know. I'm just asking. Everyone knows you love Ms. Marvel. We just want to make sure.
Because I do love Miles Morales' Spider-Man as well, and Viv Vision. Those are, like, the three characters I honestly started reading it for.
For sure.
So the fact that it has two of the three in there, I'm good.
What exactly did you not like about it, then? Because everyone so far have only heard you say, fuck the Secret Empire.
So the reason I didn't like it is because it's a... It felt like... It was still true to the Champion style, but it felt like it was a... It was almost like Secret Empire was trying to tear it out of this ground level superhero comic, which is the reason I love Champions so much. It has this Avengers style team that really goes in to solve these everyday social, like, economic issues instead of Secret Empire, where they're trying to fight the whole world of Hydra agents and of space barrier and, like, sectioning off Manhattan and these giant, huge, like, epic storylines that are going on. Which is the reason I don't really like Secret Empire that much, is just because it's like, I'm not really that big into that kind of level of stuff. I prefer the ground level superheroes. So, and I feel like this was still trying to. I feel like this was Mark Waid being approached by the Marvel staff and being like, "Look, you do Champions. You need to do a tie-in." And he was like, "Oh God, all right, we got some." So he did, I think he did really good with the issue. The fact that it is a prison camp and it does get very into the people in it. It's very character driven still. And we get to see, you know, just some great superhero battles. We get, like, some interesting good versus evil in it. And it still feels like Champions. But I can also feel the pull of Secret Empire trying to transpose the Champions into the Avengers.
Right.
Which they are not in general.
My feeling overall, so I think, I don't know if I fully disagree with you. I do not know yet if I fully disagree with you, but I hear what you're saying, and as, you know, citizens of this world, we can have a regular talk about it and not get upset.
I'm upset about that.
But I feel like I actually needed this issue. I needed this issue because I needed to see them be the champions within a more bigger scope. I need to see them. I need to see the big epic fight, but at the same time, they're doing it the champions way still. So while I appreciate the like kind of like corporations taking their logo and dealing with various social issues, those are very important and very critical to champions. It has to happen that way. But at the same time, they decide to become this way because they feel like they are doing things different as superheroes, right? Mm-hmm. And so their approach to this whole situation is champions, is how champions should handle the situation.
Yeah.
At the same time, you want to see a couple of fists and fisticuffs and whatnot, but I feel like I needed to see action and see how they dealt with action at this scale as the champions. So it's a good, it's a taster. Because, like, when the Phoenix comes to town, what are they going to do? They're going to go deal with the corporation while the Phoenix is destroying the Earth? No. Yeah. They got to deal with the Phoenix.
I mean, maybe. Somebody has to somebody has to worry about, like, all the murders.
Yes, like, I agree
with you. The gun violence that's going to happen while the Phoenix is in town. What, do you think, I don't know, it's like, something, I don't know.
I don't
like
disagree with you.
Homelessness is going to stop just because the Phoenix is in town or something like that.
I don't disagree with you, but at the same time, they have to address the fact that none of that matters if Phoenix takes over the Earth, you know?
Yeah. That's true.
And so there has to be some level of, yes, we're street people and we get it, we're dealing with normal stuff, but at the same time, we're also not going to let, you know, blah, 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 Dr. Doom take over Manhattan.
They have to be part of the world.
They have to be part of the world. Yeah, exactly. That might be exactly what I need this issue for, because they felt very almost elitist for a little bit there. Almost like in a bubble, like this is all that's going on in the world is this. I'm like, no, there's actually a lot of other really big stuff happening in this universe. You should probably be a part of it. And that's all I was feeling. That's it. That's it. Damn millennials. So
it's okay. And I feel that, especially with the last like two issues, I felt, or what is it, one or two issues where they're just kind of recovering from a lot of like shock of like starting the team and like actually seeing what it means to do this, which were very slow and very more like heart to heart hangouts than anything. Like everyone just like sitting on the couch and being like
chit-chatting.
What does life mean?
Yes. Right.
And I think you're exactly right. That this does put them into the Avengers status without them actually like really betraying their roots too much. So putting them in the context of the greater MCU.
Right, and like you said, there's this bigger Hydra thing going on, but they're worried more about the concentration camps and busting people out. And so there's again, it lends itself to a true champion's feel, but I can see though where it seems forced, because it is forced. Ultimately it's forced. Mm-hmm. This whole sequence is forced, but I was okay with it.
Yeah, so we'll see how long this lasts. I'm still gonna be reading Champions throughout, through the good and the bad, but
one of the bads for you.
Yeah. As I so eloquently put it earlier, fuck Secret Empire.
Nice. I feel like that was a double, so Nat, why don't you go?
All right. Last one I'll talk about today, and this will be quick for me, is Wonder Woman 25. This is called Perfect. It is the final story in Greg Rucka's 25-issue Wonder Woman run, and yeah, it's just a wrap-up story, and it's sweet and bittersweet, and it deals a lot with...
Is it a bittersweet symphony?
There's no music. So...
Nice.
But he's got Liam Sharp and Blake Evely, I hope I'm pronouncing her name correctly, doing art, alternating in this book. And it's just, it's interesting to see Wonder Woman's position in the Justice League, like where they find her as the heart of the team. Because they're in the middle of a fight they're not doing well at, and she pops in from nowhere and just wrecks. And Batman and Superman are like, are you okay? So the previous events have kind of left her seemingly a little bit empty. Like the she's reconciled the information about her history, but it's not satisfying. So, and as I think as a reader, you felt that way too. You were a little bit unsatisfied. You enjoyed the whole ride, but so she was left without the perfect, which is the golden lasso. It had to be left to bind the previous villain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so the story, you know, they notice it. They mention it as part of the story. She doesn't have the lasso.
Wow.
And so she kind of has a communion with the gods, and they tell her, like, no, we've always loved you for your undying care of everything, and that's why we've given you these gifts, and suddenly the lasso's back. So wow. It's her having to deal with the fact that she's not just the powerhouse of the Justice League, but she's the emotional core. And sometimes that's restrictive enough that she's got to be the level-headed and hopeful one, because mm-hmm. that is what the world sees in her, and it may be a heavy burden, but that is her. And then it ends with a small moment of her and Steve Trevor in her new home that he and his crew put together to make it so that Diana has a place, a home here on Earth that she can get away from everybody else.
Nice.
It's a very sweet and very little sweet. Perfect ending to this lovely run. So
nice.
So it's over now. This is the last issue.
This is the last issue with Greg Rucka. So creative teams are going to change, and it's going to have a different feel.
But Wonder Woman will still be.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know whether or not readership is going to stay with the book, because mm-hmm. this was such a long and, you know, well crafted piece.
So yeah,
it'll be interesting to see what the changes are like.
All right. Interesting. You want to go again, and I'll do my final one.
Yeah, so for this I have a trade paperback to do. This is Monstrous Volume 2, The Blood.
The Blood.
So this is another one of the books that I usually just pick up in trades. I mean, there's only two so far, but I see myself just continuing to get the trades as opposed to the individual issues because, for those of you who haven't read Monstrous, it's an amazing work of high fantasy. Marjorie Liu and Sana Takeda are the right. Marjorie Liu is also known for her work on X-23. A lot of those runs, and pretty much creating the character we know today. And it really is. There's just so much to this world going on that is established through indirect storytelling, that this really sets up. So I guess just to give a brief thing, there's humans, and then these humanoid creatures called Arcanix. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Marjorie Liu, if you want to come in and talk to me about that, feel free. And they had a civil war some 7 or 10 years ago, and so now this, the main character, Micah, she is going through this world and trying to figure out what happened, like her legacy, which is deeply intertwined with the Arcanic, sort of hierarchy and, like, their history, and, It's really hard to describe just because there's, like, so much going on in the world and so little going on in the plot. It's really more... It's just an adventure.
Yeah.
Like, that's all there is to say about it. She's trying to find... Like, in the first volume, she's trying to find out how her mother died. And in this volume, she's trying to figure out what the events that led to her death were, pretty much. And why she lived this way. She is possessed with this demon that hungers, and she eats the energy of things. And yeah, it like I said, it's hard to describe. I'm really digging the ride though. This is just a great world and a great and just a great story. And there's a lot of really cool parts to it. One of the things I love the most about this is it's a very solid matriarchy. Like, the women are definitely in charge of this world. And, like, for instance, instead of saying, like, oh my god, they all say, oh my goddess.
Oh, that's cool.
And okay. There's just really interesting, subtle things about that.
Beautiful.
And Nat's over here. The artwork is phenomenal. Very intricate, very, very pattern-oriented. Yeah, a lot of thought that's gone into this world.
Nice. Yeah, I wanted to read it, but I haven't picked it up yet. I read the first issue, I think, okay. And I wasn't as impressed. So I was like, I'll wait. Okay. So, all right. I guess I will do the last one here. I have is Baby Teeth number 2. So I only picked it up because I was like, I need to do something different because I've been reading the same stuff forever. And I believe it's written by Mark Englert and I assume drawn by Taylor Esposito, but I'm could just be making that up. The idea is that there's this kind of woman who, or girl, 16-year-old girl, immaculate conception is what we assume is going on. Baby born, earthquakes, alien, demon, raccoons, and then she's back home with her dad trying to raise his child. And apparently this child's birth was like the beginning of something big, right? Gotcha. We just don't know what it is. Looks very demon-esque though. And you go in through and she's just kind of like coping with being a new parent and her dad's helping her out, blah, blah, blah. And the kid's not eating. Well, it turns out at the very end, the reason that the kid's not eating the milk from the bottle, she finally gets him to breastfeed, finally. And then you see her like freak out and tear the baby off of her and he like has blood all over her face because the baby drinks blood. So, yeah.
Wow.
What?
That's it. Baby Teeth number 2. Go pick it up.
Wow. Number 2. Wow. Dang. That's
yeah, it's nice. Pretty crazy, but
Rosemary's Baby stuff.
At first I didn't, I thought I was going to slam it and say this is a horrible book, and then I actually read the whole thing, and I was like, alright, this isn't so bad. The part with her and her family, way better than the dialogue between the bad guys that are happening. The bad guy stuff doesn't really matter to me, but her interaction with the baby is the most important part. Cool. So, we'll see how it goes. All right, I guess we'll call it here. Say goodbye, everyone.
Bye.